Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we got a fun one. We're talking about our top cards from Edge of Eternities, and specifically focusing on the 99, because we're probably going to talk about Commanders in a future episode. So the best cards from Edge of Eternities for the 99, and this set has so many cool cards. I love this set. But before we get into all that, we got a crew to introduce, kicking things off with Krim, probably better known as the Agent Avenger. How's it going today, Krim? Good to see ya.
Good morning. Good morning. I am beyond thrilled to talk about this set because I think this might be my favorite in-universe set in some time. Like, I think since, like, Neon Dynasty.
I feel like it at least has my favorite art of, like, maybe any modern Magic set, like, in a long time. But, anyway, we're not an art podcast. We're a card podcast, but we got a crew to introduce. Phil, what's up today, Brewer's Kitchen? How's it going?
Hey-o. Don't mind the new location. Nothing happening in my apartment. Nothing water related at all. Also, I love this set so much. I love everything space. And yeah, the artwork is sick. I love the warp mechanic as well. This is set of the year here for sure.
And last but certainly not least, Budget Commander Tomer. How's it going, Tomer?
I'm doing great. I'm also a big fan of the direction of the set. The sci-fi stuff is really cool. And I'm also very selfishly excited because there's a lot of cards here that are going into my paper collection. And they're going to make some decks that are already hated even more hated. So I'm very excited.
I agree. I share that sentiment.
Artifix did nothing wrong.
So before we get into the best Edge of Eternity cards, we got a couple sponsors for you today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back into your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment which order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic card. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. It is back, and last week we talked about cards that are insane, but only in the right deck. And our top comment comes from X Tempest Buster, who says, as my grandpa once said when facing Krim, my deck has no cards.
So good.
I remember that of the hit anime.
Yeah.
Krimio. I love
Krimio.
Yes.
Love
that one.
That'd be funny if it was like, go for the heart of the cards that he sees. There's nothing left. And you're like, oh.
Episode ends. Has no cards, neither pathetic or any at all.
So anyway, let's talk about the best cards from Edge of Eternities. And we're going to do this like we normally do, where we kind of go around and pick our favorite cards. But there's one group of cards we want to get out of the way altogether because we had various versions of them on our list. And those are the Mythic Planet lands. So if you haven't seen these lands, there's a whole cycle of them. They each tap for one color. They enter the battlefield tapped. They all have the station mechanic, which means you can tap your creatures at sorcery speed to put charge counters on the planet land equal to the creature's power, and then once you get at least 12 charge counters on them, they all get an ability. The green one turns into a Gaia's Cradle. Pay a green, tap it, make a green for each creature you control. The blue one turns into a Tolarian Academy. Pay a blue, tap it, make a blue for each artifact you control. The white one is pay four and tap, make a token that's a copy of target artifact or enchantment you control, except it's legendary, only as a sorcery. The black one, you can pay two and two life and sack a creature, draw cards equal to the sack creature's power, only as a sorcery. The red one has its tradition with land cycles.
That's one.
Kind of gets the short end of the planetary stick here. Pay two, tap, sack a land, make a 2/2 colorless robot artifact creature token. Then creatures you control get +1/+0, gain haste until end of turn. That one you can activate at instant speed if you want to. So most powerful one for sure, right? But anyway, What do you guys think of these planet lands? We got these lands that call back to some of the most, some of these at least, call back to some of the most powerful lands in Magic's history. How good are these? Which ones are you hyped for? Phil, there's one on here when I see it, I'm like, that seems like a Phil card.
Yeah, for sure. I actually think they're all pretty clunky. Obviously, it's good if you activate the green and blue one, or like unlock it. But the one I'm interested in is the white one, because it is a legendary token, so I can't go further with it. But it will create a token of Caretaker's Talent, and I just recently built my custom commander, differently named tokens commander list. And this one's going right in there. Let's hope the price, actually the price is, well, the price is fine right now, but it seems like a super safe card. It is just a super unique effect. I don't know if there's any way to make the legendary thing a positive, because it's so easy to copy tokens. Yeah, it's like you have City of Death and Three Blind Mice. Like, if it wasn't legendary, you could also just copy the same token.
Yeah,
that's
probably what they want to avoid, right?
How do you?
I think it's definitely the interesting one of the cycle. So
do we feel about, unless you have constructs.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Kind of sucks to activate them.
The blue one is like so ahead of the rest of these, because like, if you're in an artifact deck, you have so many really good ways of making giant creatures just by existing. Like, we have the Urza Saga, we have the Synthesizer, I forget the name of it.
Simulacrum Synthesizer.
There's a couple other ways of making constructs as well. There's like the white like flip land that does it too, that makes a gnome struck. So like, I think it's going to be very simple for you. Just jam this into like a blue artifact deck that happens to make constructs of Urza or whatever. And then you like tap one construct and then bam, it's online. Seems good.
The other interesting aspect, that one does seem good. I think that is the best one for the reason you mentioned. It's also interesting that it's maybe the most irreplaceable one. Like, the green one calls back to Gaia's Cradle, but we have other, like, Growing Weights of Itlamok is, like, a pretty good replication of, like, a bad Gaia's Cradle. But we don't really have a functional Talarian Academy, I don't think.
Commander. We do.
Stormlight. functional. I said
that
functional.
That one's easy. It's like, you have like six artifacts or something on the battlefield, and you're like, it flips, right?
It's like two colors, and it's it. But yeah, I mean, like, yes, I guess. If you can jump through the hoops, but it is in two colors, which makes it a lot tougher compared to just like being straight mono blue. I think the green one's kind of easy too if you want it to be. Like, if you're playing Galta or like big creature green decks, I think you can turn it on. Mm-hmm. Although it's kind of awkward that Cradle really likes mana dorks. You just spew your hand of like mana dorks and make a ton of mana early. That's not going to work very well with the green planet land, because those mana dorks are not going to do a good job of actually turning it on. Krim, what do you think about these? You got a favorite one? Do you think they're any good?
I immediately blanked the blue one out of my mind, because to me it's just another thing that artifacts can abuse, right? So I'm not like, oh my god, this is, they finally broke artifacts. But we needed the help. Yeah. They really needed
for
the
so
help.
Long.
Or underpowered artifacts.
Yes.
Yeah. I think in Commander, the one that's interesting to me is actually Adagia. I don't know, Adagia. Either way. Right? The white one, just because I do like just what it's doing, right? I think that what it's doing is unique, and it's not just like, hey, we're going to get just, again, staple or like a Talarian Academy onto something, staple a Gaia's Cradle. It's just something new, and it's unique, and I just like that. And it's something that is generically good, I think, in Commander, because we play a lot of artifacts and enchantments passively. So I think that this is a card that I would more than likely love to just have on the board. And the question is, where can I crew this, right? So obviously my Super Friends deck, not going to crew this. But, or maybe I can with all the tokens, who knows? But I do think that this is one of those things kind of like MDFCs, where it's a little bit free, because in Commander, at least casual Commander, where the games are slow enough to where I might just be able to passively crew this with like a 2-1, right? Like, Phil and I, we already play a lot of speed. Like, we play speed, and that's almost the same thing as Station, right? I feel like with a four turns to, like, ramp up.
Oh, that's a good comparison, yeah.
Right? Like, with four turns to ramp up, we get to max speed pretty easily, right, Phil?
Mm-hmm.
So, if that's the case, I imagine that Station will just passively get there as well.
I think it's going to be kind of hard. The big drawback of this is speed. You can trigger it like with drain effects, ping effects, attacking if your deck is just about attacking. But this one, like, if you're attacking, then it kind of sucks that you're tapping down your attacking creature, so you're skipping an attack, but then you're also skipping a potential block too. So you're kind of leaving yourself open. So I don't know.
I'll give you the blocking point because I think that's true. But like, there's just turns where we get outclassed on the board, right? Where I'm doing nothing anyways. So if that's the case, why not turn that into potentially something later?
I don't think it's that hard to turn on, but I do think it depends on the deck to some extent. Some decks, like you said, if you're Super Friends deck or whatever, a Spellslinger deck with no creatures, like, you're not going to turn it on. But it only gets that hard in a creature deck to turn it on, but I do think there's a cost to it. It's, even in the early game, if you're tapping down 2-3 power creatures, we've seen on Commander Clash again and again and again, it's very powerful just to have an early body on the battlefield so you're not the blood bag that's taking like all the attacks of people that want to trigger their stuff early. And I feel like if you're the person that's just like tapping your entire team every turn to try to power these up, you're definitely going to be the blood bag, right? That's just going to get hit and hit and hit as people want to trigger their things. So I do worry about that a little bit, but I think they're actually almost all very good. Even the black one, I think, is very strong. The red one, I think, is still unplayable. Am I missing anything on the red one that this card is just absolutely not worth playing in any deck, basically?
I absolutely forget that there is a red one.
I mean, like, it's actually not the best one, that's for sure. I think the blue one is the best one. But
Mass
it is
Haste
like
is something.
But it like it, I would it, play it puts three power on the board. It puts three power on the board. And then if you do have like a big, like if you can make like a big army or something, if you go wide, I don't know. This is not the worst.
I think they were trying to make it synergize with the Jund Commander Precon because it has that land sack theme. So I think they wanted to have like an upgrade that you get from the main set and put in your mana base and sack lands with your lands. And
that's what the green one is
for me. The problem with the red one is we just have so many other cards that do that. Like red has so many Mass Haste cards. It has plenty of token producers. So it just does stuff you can get in other ways without tapping your team and sacking lands. But
The land sack is such a steep cost, though, right? There's this new Baloth thing that's like whenever you sacrifice a land, you create a 4/4. Why just a 2/2 robot for spending mana, crewing it up, sacrificing land? That is,
it hurts
a little bit more. Like, it is kind of obviously how, unless we underestimated like.
I also think they priced it for being standard lethal too. Where in Commander you could have this make a 4/4 all day, but if this was making like a 4/4 for 2 in standard, maybe it would be a little oppressive. But
well, sacrificing anyway, that
they could have made it a 6/6. I don't know if it's standard, dude.
Anyway, those are the planet lands. But let's get into our list proper and let's kick things off with you, Phil. Phil, what's one of the top Edge of Eternity's cards?
Okay, so there's one deck that is always looking for new cards, but space is getting a little tight lately. But this one's going to make it into my Alonis deck for sure. It's Starfield Vocalist. 4 mana, 3/4. If a permanent entering the battlefield causes a triggered ability of a permanent you control to trigger, that ability triggers an additional time. So Panamonicon for everything. Don't play a bounce land. And then Warp 2. So you can just warp it in, have your combo turn, and don't worry about it. I think that's the plan here. Mm-hmm. It is so good. It's also a Panamonicon that triggers Lonis right away. It is one of the best cards ever for the deck. It's kind of hilarious how good it is for this.
It's so funny, because I love Panamonicons, but I saw this and I was like, it's kind of just another Panamonicon. We get one every set. But the warp cost is actually a pretty huge deal. Part of the problem with Panamonicons is people see it coming because they're like 4 mana, Elishdorn's 5 mana. You got to play them, wait a turn, and people are like, oh, I should probably blow that up or something scary is going to happen. But this at 2 mana for the warp cost is perfect for setting up those like combo kills like you were talking about. So I think in that context, the card seems really, really good. What do you guys think of this one, Krim and Tomer?
There's a space anime art, so the card.
I haven't seen this one yet.
That is going to be my change.
Why?
Oh, God, no.
Why is this?
Are you telling? Okay, first off, okay, let me teach you all. I'm gonna sit you down for a second here. Anime has sci-fi. Did you know?
Okay.
And also, sure. This is, they are masterpieces. Like Vivi Fluorite's song is exactly what I think.
We just had an anime set. Does every set have to have anime cards? I don't know. Whatever.
Space.
Good for them. Good for them.
Anime is real, Tolmer.
Sure.
And it exists.
Whatever.
And it,
I mean,
can't
Cowboy
hurt
Bebop.
You. Yeah,
but
Cowboy Bebop. Sure, that's one of the known ones. But yeah. There is one that's literally about a robot learning to sing for the world. And in the galactic world. But it is so much darker than that because I don't want to get into that. Anyways, the whole point here is I love the artwork and I want to play it because of that. Simply just because of the artwork.
I'll just say the card. I think this is the best Panamonica for the reasons mentioned. I think Warp is what really just sets it apart. Is that, yeah, like you don't have to be like, oh, I play this and then I pass. So you could be like, because it's 2 mana, it's cheap enough that you can play it. Do your thing, and then whatever. We can warp it back another time, and if it dies later, who cares? You already got the value.
I don't know. Like, I would prefer, what's, like, the something knowledge, virtue of knowledge in non-creature decks, because the 2-mana side also works pretty well with either triggers or fetch lands, but in creature-heavy decks, probably Yarok as well, this one seems...
Also, Elish Doran's kind of busted just because it shuts down like half of what your opponent's does. So there's a few good Panermonicons these days, but this is definitely another one, and it does seem really good in Lannis. But let's keep moving on. Krim, what do you got for us for a top Edge of Eternity discard? I knew you were going to have this card as your top card.
I love that. I knew that
spoiler went up. I was like, I know that we're going to be talking about this one. Yeah.
All right. So this set has some spells that are just like directly just at me. Right. So, and there's many. So I think I'm going to lead off with the one that you probably expect the most, and it's Space Time Anomaly. Right. So it's 2 white and blue. Sorcery, target player mills cards equal to your life total. Now, normally, as the archenemy, I get smacked a lot. So my life total's kind of low. But the one thing here is, like, in a Hope Esteem deck, which is my new love because, holy hell, is he busted? this card, that deck gains so much life. And I'm usually, even after rounds and rounds of damage, I'm, like, at 50 life. So just milling one player for 50, like 50 cards, that's huge for 4 mana, right? Like this is just an absolute house of a mill spell. So I like this just because I feel like Magic in the last year between, well, this set and, Final Fantasy, they're combining archetypes that you don't normally think of. So like life gain and mill merge together. So this is just, like, it's not like a one-off thing. You can see they're continuing to do so.
I kind of wish it hit each opponent. I think that's my one criticism, is I feel like, would it have been too overpowered if it was each opponent mills equal to your life total?
Yes.
For 4 mana.
Really? It's just over.
But it's like, what's the point of, like, Aetherflux Reservoir and stuff, you know? It's like, you just do this and you hit everybody, like...
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I guess you could copy it a bunch of times or like Snapcaster it or something. There's ways you can still try to power it up. It is very good, though. And I also like that even outside of Hope, could it be good enough in a life gain deck? That's where I wanted to play it, is in a non-Hope like life gain deck as a finisher. But that's where I feel like only hitting one person, like if my challenge is going to be I need to get to 100 life. To actually win with this card, just taking out one person is, I'm not sure that's enough for me to build an entire deck with that being the focus.
Well, you don't have,
I think
mean,
it's good
it's
to have
mana.
A silver bullet, right? Yeah. I like for the cost, and like, let's just say in a hypothetical pod, right? There's an artifact player. The artifact player has to go because they're the one that can kill you instantly. So you know what? I think I barely, it's very
Lies.
Easy where I'm going to aim this, right?
Lies.
So it's just nice to have a silver bullet. And
we're just charging some stations over here.
That's Okay.
I think for 4 mana, just kill somebody when you're at when you're at like 70 life or something. Very
and
much worth
even,
a spot.
Even a non-Hope deck, like you had mentioned, Seth, I think it's still good there, right? Like if I can play blue-white Soul Sisters, again, good to just have a one-off kill somebody or a player removal, if you would. Doomblade for the an opponent.
It's crazy that it's a rare, and then you could have 2 of those or something in limited.
Oh, this is insane,
I know it's
in limited.
A Commander podcast, but Jesus Christ.
The The other interesting part of this card is it doesn't say target opponent. So I could see playing this in a self-mill, like, graveyard deck where I don't even really gain that much life, but just, like, 4-mana mill 30 or something. If my goal is to fill my graveyard, actually seems very powerful. Anyway, let's keep moving on. Tomer, we haven't gotten to you yet. What do you got for a top Edge of Eternity's cards?
Okay, here's a card that I read and I was like, ah, that's okay. It looks kind of bad. But then I read it again and I was like, oh my God, this card is actually disgusting. It is Starwinder. Now, Starwinder is 7-mana blue. It's 5 and double blue for a creature Leviathan. It's a 7/7. And it says, whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw that many cards. And it also has the warp mechanic, which is a brand new mechanic in Edge of Eternities. It costs 2 and double blue, so 4-mana total. You can cast this card from your hand for its warp cost. Exile this creature at the beginning of the next end step. Then you may cast it from exile on a later turn. So it's kind of like Evoke meets Adventure, kind of. I don't know. It's not like that. Or you can warp it in for cheaper, and then it goes exiles at the end step, and then you can play it for the full cost. So I looked at this card, and I was like, oh, it's just a Coastal Piracy, right? Like, whenever a creature you control deals damage, you draw a card or whatever. No, it says you draw that many cards. So if you hit somebody for, like, 7 damage or something, you're drawing 7 cards. If you're hitting with multiple creatures, you could draw, like, a bajillion cards. So just, like, warping that in for 4-mana and then just hitting somebody for, like, 5 damage or more seems incredibly easy as a play pattern in, like, a lot of different decks. You don't have to be, like, go tall or go wide. You can do whatever you want as long as you're hitting somebody. You're going to be drawing silly amounts of cards, especially if you can give this, like, haste. If you have, like, a haste enabler on the battlefield, you could already swing with it for 7. And then, yeah, like, the 7-mana hard casting, it is a lot. But, like, whatever. The warp cost is already good.
Oh, Tomer, I am so happy you pointed out this card because I, too, love this one. And for that exact reason, I think everybody reads this as a Coastal Piracy.
Yeah.
And then they read it again and like, wait a minute, hold on, this card's crazy crap. I am so on board with this card, dude. It's so sick. The warp mechanic, I think, is just a sweet mechanic all around. And on top of that, this card is so nuts. And lastly, there's a whale. Right. There's an art of
the whale.
I think all three. I like all three of the arts. The whale one is my favorite, but like honestly, all three of the arts are so good.
Oh, for sure. But like, there's something about a space whale, I don't know what
the
it
pink
is.
Moon
I
or whatever.
Love
it's
space
so good.
Whales.
Oh, yep, same.
Yeah,
that's a staple.
I think that so when you think about the warp cause. 4-mana is what you pay for, like, Coastal Piracy, Biden Athassa. So at first glance, you might be like, well, why would I pay something that only sticks around for one turn when I can play something that sticks around all game? But as you guys have been talking about, just, like, the immense amount of cards that you can draw in that one turn more than makes up for it. So I feel like this is, like, in any deck with a lot of, especially big creatures, but any deck with a lot of creatures, this is at least in the conversation. And then it gets even better if you're, like, a sea monster deck. If you're doing Kiora Shenanigans or some of those, then it's, like, very
on the sea monster
for those decks. Yeah,
what I really like about this card is that it finally blue outdraws green. Like, because green has been doing this forever, right? I'm like,
Wild
Speaker.
True.
And, like, Hunter's Insight, Hunter's Powers has lived on forever. So green has just been doing this better than white as blue for, like, forever. And now finally blue, the color of card draw, allegedly, can do it better than green. So thank you.
Finally
blue's...
blue can catch up to green card draw. Yay!
Yeah. Well, one place that blue has still not caught up to green is with the land Shenanigans and Ramping. So my first pick is a card that I feel like maybe they shouldn't have even made. It's a very green card, and I think this card is just straight up busted. And that is Ice Till Explorer. So Ice Till Explorer is a 4-mana 2/4 insect scout. And it has two different effects stapled onto it that should probably not be together, which is you can play additional lands on each of your turns, and you can play lands from your graveyard. And then, like, you need it more. It has landfall. When a land enters, you get to mill a card to fill your graveyard. So Ice Hill Explorer is like an Oracle of Moldiah effect, but rather than playing cards off the lands off the top of your deck, you get to play them from your graveyard. And with a optimal mana base where you're playing fetch lands, playing lands from your graveyard is actually just way more powerful than playing them off the top of your deck because you can always just replay your fetch lands. So I see this as guarantee that you're going to basically ramp every turn that is on the battlefield from your extra land drop. And then you also get the synergies where you could be doing strip mine stuff or wasteland stuff. You can be getting back lands like Buried Ruin that keep getting things back from your graveyard. So you can be setting up any sort of like glacial chasm you keep putting into play as one of your land drops and you never die. Like, there's so many synergies with this card. But I feel like the combination of extra lands and lands for the graveyard make this just like a staple level card for almost any green deck, definitely any landfall deck it's going to be good in. I think it's really good in self-mill style decks, like Madrotha style decks, because it's also filling your graveyard. But what do you guys think of this card? Am I giving it too much credit? Is this like a super busted card, or am I off base?
I still feel a little... explorer, more like I still think green needs to be banned. Because, like, honestly, this card is nuts. This card is legit.
Very
nuts.
Good.
Oh, my God. Also, it's going to fit in my Black Panther deck because, you know, Black Panther has their intergalactic empire in the comics. So, naturally, since the Wakandans go to space, I got to start jamming space things into the deck. This card is so nuts in the lands archetype, though. Why did I... I don't know why. It's just like, can you just cool it, green, for like 30 seconds? Like, please.
One set. Give us one set.
You know,
set.
It's like,
yeah.
you put like a head shredder on the battlefield too, which is like whenever you're milling lands, you put them directly on the battlefield. Oh, you don't have to do that. You should just like splendid reclamation, everything back afterwards. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, it's still disgusting.
It feels a little on the nose. You, Seth compared it to Prophet of Kruphix in the... spoiler video, in that it combines two abilities that you usually use two cards to assemble some synergy or combo. It is kind of, and then it mills with every. I feel obligated to put it into Necrobloom, but it feels a little too easy, unless 4 mana is too much, but I don't think so. It seems like you really
green?
Go off
in
after
the land.
I mean,
step? 4 mana?
I mean, it's like so one easy mana. To turn two ramp into this on turn three, and then you play the extra land drop, and then you're just the off to the races. Yeah, the card's like silly.
I don't know why they keep making these kind of like single piece engines. Know what I mean?
Just got the Chocobo, yeah.
Right, like this kind of just like feeds itself, right? And it's kind of nuts because of that. Like the things, the type of cards. Were usually split, so you kind of had to work to assemble the engine, but as if lands wasn't already busted enough, now they just have an all-in-one, so God.
Get over the times, old man. This is 25 magic. What, are you going to spend two cards to do this?
This is the cost of blue catching up to green's draw power. This is the cost.
Green is like, well, we now have
you gotta pay the price.
Better card advantage and recursion and ramp. Also fall behind, or we won't be in first by such a large margin.
Let's keep moving on, but that one's busted. Let's get back to the top of the order and Phil, what do you got for us?
All right, I got another warp card that also kind of plays like I warp this in for two and then I do my combo. It is Exalted Sunborn. Flying lifelink, 5 mana, 4/5. If one or more tokens would be created under your control, twice that many tokens are created instead. And warp two, so you just warp this in for two and then you have your big turn. And then you draw all the cards with Manuel's Kaga, and I hope I open this because it is a mythic and it will still cost a lot. So far, it's at $28. Should I pre-order this? I don't know. It seems like an expensive.
I'm going to be honest with you. I think you should.
I think so too,
Hear me out. Is this not the... Here's the problem. It's a token doubler.
People love
it. And it has Angel attached to it and Wizard.
All right, it's an Angel. That's right.
Yeah, because that's it's an Angel... True. Wizards don't drive as much of the price tag, but Angels just generically, as bad as they are, will just be $20.
Yeah.
So,
and is it an Angel deck, though? Like, the only thing, does Angel
does make not matter.
Right? Angels make Angels tokens.
They do.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
If you gain life, you make Angel tokens.
That's true. That's
Starnheim
true.
Unleashed. So you could
and it has lifelink, too. How
it does have lifelink, too.
All right.
How convenient.
So this is where I think if you wanted, depending on how cheap it is, I would get the anime art because the anime art is crazy cool. Look at the art and tell me it's not
so good.
I'm going to look at this art right now.
No.
Look at the dude.
It extended is, art is the way to go, yeah.
Okay,
say it, obviously, yeah. I love the standard art as well, but the anime art, it has the, it's channeling the, like, you know, like star constellations, and it's got these beautiful flowing
wings. You
know
what? I'm actually on board with this one. It looks like a Sailor Moon outfit. It looks like mid-Sailor Moon transformation. I'm down, actually. I'm good with this one. Okay, you sold me.
I also think there's an argument this is just the best token doubler because we've never had a token doubler on a non-legendary creature before. We've had Mondrax and we've had the white O'Hare, but not only does this let you warp it in for two mana, but it turns out it's pretty easy to copy creatures. There's a lot of cards that make token copies of creatures. And when you warp this for two mana and then start like molten duplicating it or using those effects on it, it just snowballs into you win the game very quickly because the token doublers double each other. And pretty soon everything you play is just making like hundreds of tokens.
And
so
you
I feel like
the
card's
copies,
like
right?
legit busted.
That's the most win more copy. Thing I've heard.
Yes, depending on what you use to make the token copies. If you use like one of the red ones that say Exile Land Step or something, it won't stick around. But yeah, so it depends on what you use to copy it. But yeah, it would stick around.
I mean, it's but not even win more, Toma, right? You flash it in for two and then you copy it with whatever.
Yeah, it's
for
true.
Probably three.
If you're like,
and then
what's that blue spell that we all love? The Fortell one that clones everything?
Oh,
a Mystic Speculation.
There it is.
Oh yeah, I had to do that with my Shauna deck for the Thousand Life episode.
I would pre-order it maybe, Phil. I feel like this card's gonna be expensive.
Yeah, I already got a extended for 30.
This card is kind of bananas.
If I can find the anime art for not a down payment, I will gladly pick this up.
I've always had these complaints about these cards where it's like you tap out and you pass and like they have to deal with you. And I don't like that. But for two mana, you could just be like I don't have to tap out and pass. I can just play this for two mana and then pop off and win. Like,
and the craziest part of Warp is there's no tax on it. It's not like because you get to warp this in early, we made the creature way more expensive and worse when you got to hard cast it. Like, you pay the normal rate that you would pay. Like, if they just printed that without warp, it would be a 5-mana creature. So you're not paying any extra for paying it full price. So warp is just, like, pure upside on all these cards, right? It's just, like, a bonus. Like, play it early and get some value out of it, and then you can still play me later. It's such a push mechanic. Anyway, let's keep moving on. Next up, we have Krim. Krim, what's another card you like from this set?
God, I want to talk about the creatures, but my God, the spells are so good from this set. The other one, there's so many spells. I want to talk about all of them. Okay, and most of them are board wipes.
Monster.
The Krim life. Mill spells and board wipes.
I think I know which board wipe. I think it would be a crime if I do not mention this as well, and you can figure this one out too. It's Singularity Rupture. Blue and black. Destroy all creatures, then any number of target players each mill half their library, rounded down. So for one more mana than a Traumatize, they've stapled on a board wipe. And you could mill yourself if you want, but like, yes, there's so much respect and love for mill in this set that I can't help but go wild.
This is your doing, Krim.
That sucks so hard to resolve this, though. You gotta count your library and then count it halfway down again.
Yes. I actually like this one because I like the fact that it targets yourself. So, like, if you are in a graveyard-based deck, this is a 6-mana board wipe that traumatizes you. And, like, I can't run this in my Melek deck, for example, because Melek's is it. But I do run Traumatize specifically to target myself. So I can get half my library into the graveyard. It is annoying, though, to count every single card in your library and be like, all right.
Not just do the two-pile thing where you kind of split your deck in two piles and line them up and you're like close enough. That's usually how I do it.
I'm too much perfectionist.
I think this card, like, I like the self-mill plan. In that case, I think you choose not to mill your opponents a lot of the time even, so you don't give them any value and you just wrath and then self-mill yourself. It seems great in mill decks. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine playing it. If I don't care about milling my opponent or milling myself, I think there's better options. But if I care about those things, this card's insane in those decks. Well, let's keep moving forward. Tomer, what do you got for us?
Okay. So we talked about how, like, mill has gotten a lot of upgrades how, you know, lanes keep getting a lot of upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry. The poor up-and-coming archetype, little-known archetype called Artifacts, which I am an enjoyer of, they got something, too. They got some treats in the set as well, a few. And one of the most notable ones that I like is Uthros Research Craft. It's a 3-mana blue artifact spacecraft, which is another, like, it's a new mechanic in EOS, kind of like a vehicle, except you have to charge them up by, like, crewing them. But then once you've crewed them, they keep their charge counters forever, and then they're always permanently whatever the thing you got with your charge counter. So at 3 or more charges, whenever you cast an artifact spell, you draw a card, put a charge counter on this spacecraft. And then when it's at 12 or more charge counters, it becomes a 0/8 creature with flying permanently, and the spacecraft gets +1/+0 for each artifact you control. So for 3 mana, and just stationing it with 3. So having like just like 3 power worth of stationing, which is, I think, very reasonable. You suddenly have one of the most mana efficient like draw engines in an artifact deck. Like, you can get this effect for like 4 mana on like a legendary creature or like just a Vedalken, but they're not artifacts and they're creatures, so they're more vulnerable to removal. This one is an artifact. And then just by crewing it for three mana, you're just like, I cast artifacts, I draw cards. And did you know that artifacts could be very cheap and you can kind of chain them together very easily in a proper artifact deck? Like, you can cast a lot of them. And then it kind of just charges itself up, which is kind of almost a downside because then it's more vulnerable to removal. But then the upside is once you've cast a bunch of artifacts and you have a lot of artifacts on the battlefield, this just like starts two-shotting people in the air because it gets +1/+0 for each artifact that has flying. It's good. I like this. This might make artifacts viable.
Oh, yeah. Finally. I do wonder, though. This card is obviously good, right? At the 3+ mark. But are these not kind of like the gods when I think of like Purphoros and like Heliod and all them, where I feel like I don't want them to be a creature? Like, I think that turning into a creature is like a downside.
Yeah, right? I think it's actually a downside because I would rather just get it to 3 and never. Well, a lot of games, I'd rather get it to 3 and never turn it on. Some games you want to turn it on, but.
Well, like, I think I'd think let of it this way. Once you've drawn enough cards, then you can just start killing people. Because
it's
now
never
you don't
enough,
have to,
Tomer.
Now you don't have to put a finisher in your deck. Your card draw engine is the finisher. Remember, we keep taking 2 cards and just putting them together so you don't have to run multiple cards anymore. Now you don't even need finishers in your deck because your primary draw engines turn into your finishers for you. Isn't that wild?
It is wild.
That is true. The other cool part about this card, and with that charge counter thing, is one of the gimmicks of the spacecraft is there's some cards that can like move charge counters around. We have some from older sets, but we got more of them in the commander decks for this set. So maybe this is in a spacecraft deck. You can put the charge counters on it, and then if it gets in danger of turning into a creature, move it onto another spacecraft to try to power that one up.
If it gets in danger of ending the game by killing your opponents, you're like, but
yeah,
then
no,
I'll stop drawing cards.
Yes. Yes, if you're
dead, I kill all my opponents, so they can no longer draw cards in this game anymore.
This is just, though, like an auto include in basically any artifact deck, though, right? Like, is there? It seems to me like it's an auto include in basically any artifact deck.
So I am gonna put it into Urza, which is artifact creatures. I'm not gonna put it into Mishra because it's non-creature artifacts, and then you could only crew it with, I guess, you
Mishra.
Could have like construct or something. Yeah, Mishra crews it. But I do not want to underestimate the 3. The good thing is that you probably cast this on 3 and then you can crew it next turn and then go off because you wouldn't need to crew it in the same turn.
I would put it in Mishra, I think.
With it only needing 3 counters, is this not just like tap your commander once the turn you play it? Like, it feels like getting to 3 charge counters seems really easy.
Mishra's power at?
Yeah, 3 seems super doable. I'm not going to say 5.
The ones that are 12 or 20, then I'm like, okay, like that's going to take a little bit of work. But 3, I'm not intimidated by 3. I think I can get it up to 3. Also worth mentioning, it is when you cast an artifact spell, which means you can't draw with your artifact tokens that you create or whatever, which is probably a positive.
Balance.
What's the Gyro or something, the one with historic spells, which is just artifacts? It just goes nuts. So maybe I replace Joyra or just play both, probably. Let's be honest here.
Well, all right. Let's keep moving on. I'm going to cheat a little bit with my next pick because I actually have 2 cards here. I have 2 uncommons that kind of do the same thing, but I wanted to shout them both out. And these are some ramp spells that I am really hyped for from the set. So number 1, Dauntless Scrapbot. So this is a 3-mana 3/1 robot that when it enters, you exile each of your opponent's graveyard, and then you create a lander token. We haven't talked about lander tokens yet. What's a lander token? It's a rampant growth on an artifact token. Pay 2, sack it, tap it, search your library for basic, put it into play tapped. So as soon as they announced lander tokens, I was like, okay, if they can put these into colors that are not green and white, I'm going to be pretty excited for them because I'm a big believer in land ramping. Unfortunately, it requires some basics in your deck, which is a downside. But still, this can be a pretty solid ramp spell, I think. Maybe not quite as good as Solemn, like slightly behind that. But if I'm playing like a red deck or a black deck or a blue deck and I really want a land ramp, this gets the job done and it even gives me some graveyard hate. The other one who I'm on a roll here, All Fade Scrolls, I think is just an absurd card. It's a mana rock, and then it's pay 7, tap it, sack it, draw X cards where X is the number of differently named lands you control. All Fade Scrolls to me reads like a 3-mana rock that is also Seagate Restoration in the late game, where you just pay 7 and you're going to draw a new hand. Essentially, it gets worse if you're, you know, a big basic deck. If you're mono blue and you have all basics, you're not going to draw as much. But with the mana bases I typically build, with few basics and ton of utility lands, this is almost just draw equal to the number of lands you control, which seems absolutely obscene on a 3-mana rock. But what do you guys think of these cards? All Fate Scrolls, Dauntless Scrapbot. How good are these ramp spells?
I mean, both of them, although I prefer the All Fates. Like I play Midnight Clock and then something, maybe with the Crowded Crypt or something, if it synergizes enough. This one seems almost generically good enough to play a 3-mana rock again. Yeah. It's instant speed, so you can just, it's always draw 7, right? Unless you're monocolor, but usually, let's say 5.
It pains me that I can't play it in any of my decks, but if I if I didn't believe in basics,
the basic believer,
this would be like an auto include. Like if you like Field of the Dead, this card goes into it. Like it's so good that I would run it in green decks that have land ramp, you know, like, because otherwise, I'm never going to be caught dead with a mana rock in my green land ramp, right? But this one, instant speed, refill your hand, +++.
So good.
Okay.
I'm higher. I mean, obviously, this is fine, I guess, because it's still a mana rock at the end of the day. But I feel like I'm higher on the lander bot. Just because as someone who doesn't play green outside of like my one deck, right? Like I just really like that now there is something out there for like anybody in a non-green deck to try to catch up with. And Dauntless Scrapbot helps with that. So I really like that, especially in Grixis colors. Mm-hmm. So I'm more excited to try that, but I am curious, is 3-mana attached to a 3-1, really 5-mana? To get a 3-1 and maybe a rampant growth, is that going to be worth it? This is a card I'm curious to try, and if I'm just better off not having it at all, because it is, like, what does this replace in a deck list for me? I'm curious, Seth. If you were playing a Grixis deck, what do you see this replacing? Is it replacing a mana rock? It's not replacing a land. Is it replacing one of my best creatures?
Well, I would probably play it over a mana rock.
Maybe
personally.
It replaces your graveyard hate
spell. No, yeah, like, if you have a graveyard hate slot, you could put it in there.
Because like the fact that it's just ETB, exile each opponent's graveyard, is quite nice.
I mean, so I have multiple pieces of graveyard hate, but like it's like Ghost Vacuum, then I got the Bajuka Bog, so then I would take out a land?
Nah.
No, I wouldn't take out a land for a 3-drop.
So yeah, maybe that's tough.
It really
depends
on
what you're playing. Maybe you need to be an artifact deck.
Okay, you got to be
or a blink. I think a blink deck is good too. Because yeah, it's not quite solemn at that point.
You
but...
still got to pay the two to sack the landers, even if you want to.
Is a graveyard hate. I don't know. I think like if I had a if I have a dedicated graveyard hate spot that's not like Bajuka Bog, I would put this in there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm not sure either. It is 5 total mana to ramp. But when you think about Burnished Hearts and so forth that are kind of like, if you're just really married to land ramping and don't want to play Mana Rocks, you got to go. I mean, look at Richard playing his O'Hare Axalons. I have to imagine that this is better than trying to ramp with O'Hare Axalon. It's got to be. Sure.
We ask Richard what he thinks of All Fate Scroll? I can imagine he hates it because it's a Mana Rock, and then it's going to be blown up until you get to 7 anyways, which...
I mean, that is probably. Richard, I don't think I asked him, but that sounds like exactly what he would say. Yeah.
Yep. All these cards are trash, actually.
Everything is trash. Yeah.
All right, let's go one more time back around. Final round for Edge of Eternities. Oh. Phil, what do you got for us?
All right, this time. I mean, I play a lot of artifact decks as well, so I'm picking Extinguisher Battleship. 8 mana. When it enters the destroy target non-creature permanent, then this spacecraft deals 4 damage to each creature. You can station it. Actually, it's just 5 plus to station it into a flying trample 10/10. But it also is just... So Mishra has 5 power, and he creates a token copy of a non-creature artifact every turn, so I wouldn't turn this into a creature, and instead... Wrath every turn, which is super oppressive, but it's 8 mana, so it's fine, right?
Wait, doesn't he die? Because it's 4. He has 4 toughness.
Does he have 4 toughness? Am I? Yeah. Yo, I think I mixed him up with.
Yeah, just put a mythical code on him or something.
With Manu's Calico there. Oopsies. Well, still.
I mean, I'm curious. What do you guys think about this? Is just like a colorless sweeper? Like, is this? You know, we play Ugin sometimes or Boom Piles. Like, is this good enough to consider like a sweeper in decks that are not, you know, white or black and have, you know, super efficient sweepers?
I mean, I think this is the new Meteor Golem, where Meteor Golem is much better in like blink style decks because you could blink the ETB. But if you're like in an artifact style deck where you're just cheating it in from the graveyard with like a Goblin Welder or whatever, like, sure, you lose the Welder at this point, but you like blow up a non-creature permanent, which is going to be like some high priority threat, and then you're a miniature wipe for all the creatures. I think that's quite good. I think it gets even better if you can like sneak it into play without losing creatures, without like Goblin Welders, like at the ready, I guess. That would be super fun.
And
yeah, this card's really good.
5 toughness, you get to dodge it. You can kind of build around it that way a little bit. And you can blink this too if you want to. Like, it's not a cast trigger, but it's just harder to blink an artifact than a creature. I also like that it's only +5 to turn on.
Exactly.
Like, so eventually you're going to have a 10/10 flying grappler.
Flample. What the heck?
Yeah,
this is Edge of Eternities in a nutshell. Basically, like, cards that are already good by themselves, but then they double up as win conditions. Maybe because they saw commander players were taking too long to win the game. So they're like, well,
we're gonna make them kill each other.
We had the finishers on all the cards, so they have to kill each other.
To be honest, you're not attacking if you're stationing, so you kind of
but sometimes you get gummed up by a like a Solemn Simulacrum right on the ground or a Spirited Companion. In this playgroup, that's a real like defense system. So this flies over that. So
also,
we're gaming.
It tramples over flying Spirited Companions.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to Wizards for letting it hit lands, because I know that really rubbed me the wrong way with Cityscape Leveler, which was like the similar card for that we got back in Brothers War. And it's like, if I'm casting this big 8 drop, it doesn't have to be non-land permanent. Like, I'm paying 8 mana. I can hit a land. It's okay. So this time you can actually blow up land, which is sweet. Well, let's keep moving forward. Krim, what do you got for your final pick? What mill spell do we? Are there more mill spells?
There are no more mill spells. And, you know, I'm going to go with a non board wipe because I realize 4 of my favorite cards are board wipes from this set, right? Because I also had the Planetary Annihilation and Mutinous Massacre. These are just honorary mentions.
Actually, let me ask you.
Yeah.
The Mutinous Massacre is. Like 7 mana Rakdos Wrath, pick odds or evens. You blow up one of them. The other ones, you Insurrection. Do you think that card's good? Like, is that Does it solve the insurrection problem where we don't play insurrection because it's too anticlimactic or whatever? Like, what do you think of that? I'm very curious what you guys think of this card, because I haven't really figured out if it's good and if it's something that's socially acceptable to play or if people are still going to get salty.
I think it's a board wipe with more, like, with fun, right? Attached to it, mm-hmm. right? So, example, there's this weird situation where, hey, maybe I want to hit you with the best thing, but I need to remember that the best thing stays around, right? So I want to board wipe all the good things and hit you with all the bad things. You know what I mean? Like, there's this weird dance, and it's going to change situation to situation, but, like, it's going to be so much fun when you play it. I think this is just a fun board wipe and an interesting way to go about it, especially because it's very Rakdos. So I am here for this.
Isn't it a bad insurrection and a bad board wipe?
It could be.
It is fun, but like, okay. It is so fun. It's a bad insurrection. Obviously, it's not going to win the game like an insurrection would. It's kind of like this halfway point, which I don't... Personally, and I'm the biggest fan. If I want to do, like, weaker insurrection, I'm just going to go, like, a Molten Primordial or, like, the new Eldrazi Primordial thingy.
But it's better than that.
No.
Nah. It's so much cooler than that, Tomer. Come on.
It's fine.
It's so much cooler than that. You get to choose. Okay.
I mean, it's probably safe. It's enough mana that it probably isn't going to be oppressive, I don't think.
I'd like to see people play it.
Oh, but Krim will, I'm sure.
I definitely will try it,
right? I
like
it if Krim doesn't wipe me out of this.
I will die if I don't. But yes. It's neither one of those cards, right? I want to mention those. Those are my honorable mentions, because also Planetary, like, Destruction or Annihilation is the new interesting one, where it deals 6 damage to all creatures, but each player chooses 6 lands they control and sacrifices the rest.
It's a slap on the wrist on the lands deck.
Yeah. Like, I feel like it's... I like what it's trying to do, but I don't know if it does enough. Yeah.
But I'm putting in my Melek deck.
It's such a card that I want to try, though, because it seems like something that could maybe help. Because, like, Urza's whatever, like, Salad Bowl.
Silex or something, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Urza's Silex. The problem is it hit every permanent on the board wipe. The fact that this only hits creatures and then hits the lands, I like that much more. And it's respectable to where it's not, like, pure LD. So I like that. I think people are probably okay if they still have 6 lands. It's not like you're denied the ability to play the game. Yeah. It just punishes the excessive ramper, right?
Yeah. So I'm putting it into my decks.
Neither one of those are the main thing I want to talk about. I want to talk about Sathera the Super Void.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. This is a card that I really like. It is 2 black-black legendary enchantment. Whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent exiles a creature chooses a creature they control and exiles it. At the beginning of your end step, if a player controls no creatures, sacrifice Sathera, then put a card exiled with it onto the battlefield under your control with 2 additional 1/1 counters on it. As an Edict Enjoyer, I do enjoy this card. The one thing that I'm very interested about is that if a player with no creatures, there's no creatures on somebody's board, you have to sack this.
Mm-hmm.
How good is this card? Because I kind of like the way it plays. It exiles. It potentially gives me a creature of my choosing. Obviously, it's never going to be the best creature unless somebody only has 1 creature, right? You're going to dunk the Voltron player, sure. But what do y'all think about this card?
I think this is the best board wipe out of the 3 by a long shot. I think this card, it's an enchantment, but I think it reads as a sorcery. So hear me out. Basically, what you want to do, you're Aristocrat's deck, and you have, like, something that you want to sacrifice that turn. At least one thing, hopefully a couple things. You know, you have, like, I don't know, there's, like, Pawn of Ulamogs or whatever, and they have make Eldrazi signs that you're going to be sacrificing for mana or whatever. So you have that already ready to go. Then for 4 mana, you play Sothera, you sacrifice a couple things, you essentially one side wipe all your opponent's stuff, but it's, like, extra wipe because it's exiled, so you can't get it back. And then it goes away, and you get something that was exiled, and it gets a little bit stronger. Like, is that not insane? For 4 mana, you just, like, Aristocrats, you're ready to sacrifice at least one thing, hopefully multiple things, play Sothera, immediately sacrifice, and you just one-sided board wipe and steal a creature for 4 mana.
I mean, I think so. Okay,
my question is Grave Pact and, like, Dictate of Erebos. Like, if you want to do this, can't I just play Grave Pact and do this forever and not sacrifice it to get your, like, Mana Dork with two counters on it or something? Like,
because people will hate you.
So the idea is it's like
worse Grave Pact, but people, yeah, okay. I can get behind that.
Yeah, so I don't
worse
play
Grave
Pact,
but you won't get hated as much.
Okay. Exactly. This will fly under the aggro radar. And also leaves you with a body.
You also get a full creature. You get the best creature that died this way, too. I don't think that's nothing.
At least it doesn't check once there's no creature, but in the end step. So you can, I don't know, sacrifice three creatures and make sure everything dies. Yeah. I'm thinking about putting this into Jeddah, but I'm not thinking about putting Grave Pact or Dictate in this deck because it's just too oppressive. But that doesn't really speak for the card. It just seems very, very fair. Also, exiling means you don't get Sephiroth or Blood Artist triggers. It's obviously very good, but Grave Pact is so much better. It's so oppressive that people will justifiably hate you.
Whenever a creature gets... Well, you still get your death triggers. Right,
but so, you don't get the Blood Artist triggers from your opponent stuff. Like Grave Pack, you'd get triggers off all your opponent stuff dying.
Yeah,
as well.
Whatever. But like Bastion Remembrance still works. Zulpit Cutthroat still works. Most of them still work.
If I think of this card like a weird reanimation spell with some removal attached to it, I think it's pretty good. If I think of it as Grave Pact, I think it's like pretty strictly worse than Grave Pact.
I think you're underselling how good it is to just steal a creature for four mana.
Yeah. I'm seeing this as more than just a Grave Pact. So, like, it is giving me a body back on top of that.
How big of a deal is it that there has to be a creature on everyone's battlefield for this to do anything? Are you at all concerned that you're going to have games where you literally cannot play this because if someone doesn't have a creature, then you just go to your end step and it gets sacrificed and you get no value?
That is a downside to it, but it is also only four mana for me, so I guess I don't mind it too much. It's a nice, like, once the board is ahead, right? Like once there's a board in general, it now makes this weird, interesting situation where do people want a board wipe? Because if they board wipe, let's say I get ahead, and then now you start deploying, then I windmill slam this. So now if you wipe my board, I potentially could exile all your stuff and then get something back for it.
Wait, is it bad that it goes away on end step? Like, I just imagine you play it and then you sacrifice like two things. And even if one person doesn't have anything to sacrifice or they lost everything, if I'm getting rid of like three, four creatures from my opponents and then I get one of their creatures immediately and it's supercharged, I think that's already worth it for me if it goes away on my first end step, no?
The board wipe thing doesn't, like, you have to, it's not like creatures your opponent control die and exile with this.
Sure. Yeah, no,
so
I would only play
this. So if you play this and get board wiped, you got super dunked on. So you really need to hit it.
I guess that's fair. Wait, hold on.
Okay. I would only run this in Aristocrats.
Whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent exiles a creature.
If everything dies at once, this thing just exiles.
There's nothing to exile.
That's I guess it's in your end
but
step.
This pairs nicely with all the edicts I play, right? And like make
That's
an
true.
Example.
This is a very grim card.
So I kind of like this. I mean, you're right. The clause of if there are no creatures is interesting, right? Because this is essentially a few turns of setup. Because then I have to play this. Hopefully everybody has things. But then also there's a world where people could politic and crash their creatures into each other to make sure this goes away. But does that not also... Is that not just...
I think y'all are
you're still
getting
a lot of removal.
I think the enchant your guys are getting hung up on the enchantment part. Like, just see it as a sorcery. Like, until end of turn, all these effects happen. And then is it not worth it for four mana?
I mean, I still like
fun.
It's probably I think it's probably good. I just keep getting stuck on Grave Pact. Every time I see it, I'm like, oh, just bad Grave Pact. It's bad Grave Pact. But I think
But then nobody the creature plays Grave Pact.
But that's because it's too good, right?
Yes.
People don't play it because it's too strong, not because it's too weak. Yeah. But I do think it's good. And I can't help but think maybe, like, this is a headliner. It's a mythic. I don't know. I feel like the card's got to be good, right? They wouldn't make this the headliner and put it at Mythic if the card wasn't good. If I conceptualize it like a sorcery, it does look better to me than if I think of it as like, bad grave pact. Interesting. Well, let's keep moving forward. Tomer, what do you got for your final pick?
I mean, I just had more just like nonsense with like artifacts and lands, but that's boring. So I have one for me, just for the dozens of us out there who are big Cavu fans. I have Possibility Technician, 3-mana red creature Cavu Artificer, very nice, 3/3. Whenever this creature or another Cavu you control enters, exile the top card of your library. For as long as that card remains exiled, you may play it if you control a Cavu, and it has a warp cost of just 2 mana. My friends. My Cavu aficionados. There's dozens of us. And by that, I mean changelings. This is like one of the most insane changeling card draw engines. For 2 mana, you can like play it and then like play a bunch of changelings. And then it doesn't matter if this is on the battlefield. As long as you have a Cavu on the battlefield, you can access those exiled cards for the rest of the game. That's insane. It's like one of the most mana efficient draw engines for a changeling deck. Even if, like, if you warp it, fine. If you hard cast it for 3 mana, still amazing. Like, oh my god, this is not for changelings. Come on,
how do you even warp it and then cast it later to draw even more cards?
I've always called them Cavu, I maybe it could be wrong. Cavu is new. I don't know. It's very smooth Cavu. The way Tomer says.
How do you say Cavu. Chocobo? Chocobo or Chocobo?
Chocobo.
Chocobo. Okay, well, Seth, I don't know about that
I'll
one,
never
but Chocobo.
Know.
But okay,
this card, I think is really good. I feel like they price this because it's a Cavu, right? And Cavus kind of suck, and there's not very many of them.
Yes.
But you can cheat on that by playing it with changelings, which there's many of. And when you do, the card becomes really, really like insane. Like the only thing holding it back is the creature type associated with it. If this was like, I don't know, a wizard or an elf card or like any other like very strong creature type, I think the card would be ridiculous, but it seems so good in the changeling stack. So I assume this is going in your Ur-Dragon deck then, Tomer. Is that the plan?
Oh, yes. I'm surprised they didn't have like a legendary 4 Cavus at all in the set. But yeah, this one I'll take.
We did just get, we got one legend just today, right?
The, yep, that was Landfall
the Pooferos
one. All your red cards have warp along with artifacts.
I meant for Cavus, the creature type.
There was none. Like something that cares about Cavu. You're right. That is kind of weird, isn't it?
Although it makes sense that nothing cares about Cavus if, for some odd reason, these are to be representative of, like, predators. So, example, if, like, slivers are to what a xenomorph is, a hive mind, or a hive of xenomorphs, they work together. Predators always work alone. So they always work alone. They never, not always. Obviously, there's times where they may be banned up, but at most you see, like, 2. Or like 3.
Yeah.
So usually it's a solo predator because they all enjoy the hunt and doing things on their own. So I could see that being why, but I'm not sure.
But this guy's like warping in backup, no? Or no?
That's fair. So this is probably closer to them to Battlestar Galactica or something like that. I am so curious. But yeah, like I was curious if we'd see more Cavus just because I had heard from the beginning of the set we'd see a few nods here. Like we saw a sliver. We saw an Eldrazi, right? I thought this was a sign that we'd get a lot of these.
Yep, so, same. That's
Mark Rosewater actually answered a question kind of about this today and said all those like one-ofs of those creature types was to show us like what we can do in space kind of. So I almost feel like this is like a plant for the future. And at some point, we're going to get some outer space copy or sliver or Eldrazi slat. So, yeah, a lot of those one-ofs were just to like let us know what's going on in the magic version of space, kind of, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all right, last pick for me. And I'm just going to go with a card that I like. I just really like this card, and I think it can be good in certain decks. But that card is Pain for All. So Pain for All is a 3-mana aura. It enchants a creature you control. When it enters, the enchanted creature deals damage equal to its power to any other target. So it's kind of like a fling that you don't have to sack the creature. But then, when enchanted creature is dealt damage, it deals that much damage to each opponent. So it turns any creature into like a better stuffy doll, a stuffy doll that damages each of your opponents rather than just one of your opponents. And then you also get this like fling style effect where you deal damage equal to your creature's power to any target you want to. And I love stuffy doll decks. I love those kind of cards. There's weird combos. You can just do the mass damage stuff with like Blast Misect or whatever. If you have any sort of like infinite damage combo, you can throw it at this. Plus the fling effect is just like very powerful. Being able to put this on a creature and deal a huge amount of damage, either as a removal spell or going face, if you can make an infinitely big creature with +1/+1 counters, you just kill someone on the spot. So I think it's just a really cool flexible card, and it's another one of those cards that's kind of combining two effects together that just normally you don't see on one card. Like each of these cards, like each of those effects we've seen separately, but we've never seen them stapled together. Of course, the downside is it's still aura, and if your opponent just swords your thing in response to you casting it, you get super blown out. So I'm not saying it's like the best card that they've ever made, because auras do have that downside, but I still think this is just like a super cool design that can do really fun things. But what do you guys think of Pain for All?
This feels like really a combo card I would play, but yeah.
Okay. Hold on. So I guess when it enters, deals damage equal to any target. Yes, and then it's okay. Would you play this generically?
No. I gotta have a plan for this.
I think there's a lot of decks that are like I think like commanders that are indestructible is the first thing I think about. Like for example. Silvar, Devourer of the Free. You know, if you make this indestructible, it grows really big, by the way.
It munches
a bunch of humans. It grows really big. Imagine you slap this baby on. Then you can, like, is it any target or just creatures? And we'll just blow up a creature? No, any other target.
It can dome somebody in the face, and then
you blast act afterwards. There's also, like, the original Mardu Zergo, which is indestructible on your own turn. So, and he's like a 7/2 or something like that. So, like, that deck always runs lots of Blasphemous Acts and stuff because it wipes the board of opposing creatures and they could swing in unopposed. So this is just another home for it. Like, it just, like, those style of things. I think it's like also like a Zangief or something that's also like indestructible on your turn, has access to red, also loves Blasphemous Acts, you know, like, those are the homes for it.
Also really good, like, Ansrag with, like, the lure effect where you can make your opponents have to block it. You can deal a ton of damage to it and then throw that damage to all your opponents. Also, like, a Rage. There's some... What is the Jund Jurassic Park dinosaur that's, like, an enraged dinosaur that you want to keep damaging and then it, like, makes your opponent sack stuff? Indoraptor or something? So
I think those are...
So I think those are also, like, good homes for it. Like, there's a bunch of just cool little synergies for the card, so I like it. But anyway, those are our top Edge of Maturity cards for Commander. For the 99, you've heard our list, and really, you saw a tiny taste of our list. If you actually see the spreadsheet we're working off of, there's like 50 cards on there or something. Yeah. That's so wild. So there's way more cool cards. So let us know what you think is going to be good from Edge of Maturities. What are you hyped for? Let us know in the comments, and we'll be back next week to talk even more Commander. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.